This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Sumitra Selvaraj. Now, as a parent, measuring your child's height is part and parcel of their growth. But what if your child is shorter than average? Is it simply genetics or perhaps a sign of an underlying health issue? To help us understand more about monitoring your child's growth and the role of nutrition, we're speaking to consultant pediatric endocrinologist Dr. Azrianti Anwarzaini and Rosanna Rosli, Head of Dietetic Services at the University Malaya Specialist Centre. Azrianti, Rosanna, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you so much for inviting us. Hi there. Hello. Thank you for inviting.
Okay, so let's get straight to it then. Since we're going to be talking about stature all throughout this afternoon, session. When is it considered that a child is short?
Okay, right. So the topic today is all about short stature in children. I guess short stature is a complete concern, especially when parents notice their children are shorter than peers. I think that will probably be the first thing that will probably come up to any parent's mind to see, oh dear, my child is slightly shorter than the friends.
So it's a comparison that they're looking at.
It's a comparison.
Okay.
Exactly. So obviously, short children is something that is something that's very important to notice and to be able to identify as early as possible, because if not detected, short children will tend to be most of them will tend to be short adult. So you see, short adult is technically disability by itself.
Okay.
So in as an average, we do know that the latest publication has already shown that Malaysian men is around 167.5 centimetre. And our Malaysian ladies and women are around 154 to 155 centimetre in average.
Okay.
So if you tend to be shorter than that, there's a lot of disability. Like, for example, very simple to drive. If you're shorter than 145, you tend to have problems with driving.
Sure.
Yeah. And the other one is problem during delivery. Short ladies can have issues during delivery as well.
Okay.
So that's why it's very important to identify short children.
All right. So let's then perhaps understand from a medical perspective, right? What does a timeline of growth look like? At what age do children kind of experience an optimum growth period? What about growth spurts? What does that growth timeline look like?
Okay. Right. So children grows throughout their entire childhood years.
First 18 years.
So let's just say children is within the first 18 years of life, okay? So the most important time of growth is actually the first 4 years of life.
Okay.
The first 2 years of life, children grow massively, okay? They grow, you know, from a little baby who's born literally around 50 centimetre on average. This is for a normal term baby. And by the age of 1 year old, they are about 75 centimetre. So meaning that they grow up to 25 centimetre per year.
Right.
Okay. So the second phase of life is actually the childhood years. Around between five to just the peripubertal period up to 10, 11 years old. Okay. They grow between 5 to 7 centimetre per year. And then when they go into their pubertal period, that's when they have their spurt, they grow up to 8 to 10 centimetre per year.
Okay. So, Dr. Azrianti, earlier on you mentioned what the average height of Malaysian men and women is. But is there such thing as an average height for a child?
Okay. A very good question. So in children, we measure their height and their growth according to their growth charts.
Okay.
Okay, so every parent would be provided by with their hospitals when the first time when the baby was born, regardless whether they are from the government hospital or the private hospital, they would have their own growth charts to plot on. We would definitely want them to be growing between the 3rd to 50th centile. So that is quite acceptable. If they are taller than that, that's fine, as long as they continue to monitor. And the trend is the one that's very important.
Rosanna, I saw you slip over a rather interesting looking piece of paper towards Dr. Azrianti. What is that?
This is the growth chart that we use. We use the World Health Organization, WHO, percentile charts when we monitor. It starts from birth to 5 years.
And is this applicable to Malaysian children or children in general?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, Malaysian children. Because we do not have our own percentile charts.
Yeah. So this is what we call the growth standards.
Okay.
All right.
So would you be able then to let me know what these standards look like when you compare it on a regional level? Where are we based on, let's say, our ASEAN peers, for example?
Yeah. So we are not too bad, actually. I mean, looking at the final height, I mean, our Malaysian population is actually not too bad. We are between the the 50th centile of the total final height population, which is fairly okay. Mm. But we're obviously the shorter side as compared to our Netherlands, the counterparts from the Norway, Netherlands, the Caucasians. They are definitely taller.
Yes. So. Okay. All right. So you went into this a little bit earlier, and I really like that to go into that statement a little bit further. Short children become short adults, and that could then cause a range of disabilities that might then hurt the young adult's kind of progress later in life. But besides this whole idea of a short child becoming a short adult, is there any other reason why a parent should keep track of their child's growth at home?
Definitely, because a short child can be completely normal and well and healthy.
As a short adult can be.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
So they are completely missed. Mm. But the bigger proportion of children who are short are actually contributed by their underlying medical illness. Mm. They're probably having some sort of chronic diseases that is not detected, okay? Mm. Or prolonged or, you know, severe nutritional deficiency that was not detected quite early as well. Mm. I suppose they are...
Yeah, so it's also good to monitor things like developmental milestone, fine motor skills, are they able to pick up, are they moving, are they crawling up to age? Yeah.
These are the milestones that we hear about, right, that every child should be hitting.
Correct. Yeah. Swallowing, their teeth, their nail, their growth, their hair growth, all these things, speech.
Huh, so that's interesting because I think for a lot of people and perhaps even laypersons, right, they might think that it's just height and weight, which are the main kind of parameters that you need to look at when it comes to a child's growth. But you're saying it's more than that.
Yes, of course.
Where does a parent-to-be absorb this information? How would I know as a new parent that these are all the things I should be looking out for?
I think it's recording. Okay, the most important thing is to record. Okay, in terms of, let me just talk about from the height and width point of view.
Okay.
Okay, as a doctor, we have provided the parents with growth chart very early on in their baby books.
Okay.
And I think it's very important to continue to follow up with, if possible, the same doctor. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then whenever that there is any concerns, especially when, you know, like we were talking about just now, the child is shorter than their peers.
Yes.
Falling sick a little bit too often, you know, from part of nutrition, I think Rosanna did discuss earlier on about being very picky.
Yes, correct. Foods. Only drinking milk, example, or no fixed eating schedule.
Right.
You know, only wanting to eat pureed food at a certain age.
Mm. All of this contributes.
Yeah, one colour food only, that kind of thing.
Sounds vaguely familiar, but I'm not going to go into that. And it wasn't green. Okay, so I do have quite a few more questions for you on this topic. Specifically, I'd like to go into the idea of nutrition. I mean, you've joined us here, and I think it's only fair that we go into your area of expertise dietetics as well. But let's take a quick break first. If any of our listeners have any questions on this topic, if you're worried about the height of your child, you're absolutely free to tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us your questions at 018-789-8899, or you can call us at 03-7733-2900. I'm speaking to consultant pediatric endocrinologist Dr. Azrianti Anwar Zaini and Rosanna Rosli, who is head of dietetic services at the University of Malaya Specialist Centres. This is our health and living segments for the bigger picture on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm Smitra Selvaraj, and I'm speaking to consultant pediatric endocrinologist Dr. Azrianti Anwar Zaini and Rosanna Rosli, who's head of dietetic services at the University of Malaya Specialist Centre. We're talking about the issue of stature in children specifically. And if you have any questions about this topic, please feel free to tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can call in at 03-7733-2900. We'll be happy to take your questions. So we started off the interview by talking a little bit about exactly when a child is considered short, some of the various kind of markers that you should be looking at when it comes to assessing a child's growth. So now I'd like to move into some of the more pressing concerns that parents might have on their mind, which is this issue of nutrition and growth. So really, I think the broad question that must be asked first is, what is the role of nutrition in growth? Rosanna?
I think the growth of nutrition starts, we say, 1,000 days. It actually starts from the mother's third trimester.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this leads to, say, premature deliveries and children are small for gestational age. Mm-hmm. And that's where we start difficulty in weaning and fussy eating. They don't develop. We give... and then when they come to see us at 1 year old, they've already have their own eating pattern. So
right.
It's important to look at nutrition, even from the pregnant mother, that she doesn't have diabetes, they have to induce the child earlier and things like that.
So let's go into that a little bit more. Let's look into essential nutrients for growth, but then let's start from the mother first. So what are some of the essential nutrients that are required for optimal growth?
It's important that the mother, at the final trimester, eats, of course, additional calories for the growth of the child. So includes folic acid, all the B vitamins, calcium, enough milk.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily have to be this pregnancy milk. It can be a normal milk. Ensure that she has enough vitamin D. That's very important. We do see a lot of vitamin D deficiency.
Is a high amount of protein required?
For mothers, yes, because they need the additional iron too.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes from protein, good amount of carbohydrates, and it needs to be balanced, fruits and vegetables. It depends if they have blood pressure, they have diabetes. All these things are adjusted according to their medical, how much weight they've gained throughout the whole pregnancy. Are they underweight, overweight? All these things are taken into consideration.
So all of these nutrients that you've mentioned contribute to the growth of the fetus.
Of course, yes.
So now, when the baby is born, presumably the baby should be getting all of their essential nutrients from breast milk.
Yes, correct.
And what would those nutrients be?
From the mother?
Yes.
Oh, so it comes in, all the Bs, the Ds, all the good fats.
Mm.
Yeah, we say all the mother's good, the DHA, all this comes from the mother's diet.
Okay.
So nowadays, all the mother's diet has to be enough fish and enough omegas, enough all the iron, so it goes to the baby.
Okay, right. Now, then once a child has moved on from, has been weaned off breast milk and moving on to their own independent diet, right? This is when things start to get a little bit sticky and difficult, especially if you come up against picky eaters. Let's lay down the law first. What should children be eating if you're not giving them a choice in the matter?
I think first we have to look at the child.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is the child able to sit up? Is the child able? Does the child show interest in more food? Does the child demanding more milk from the mother?
Mm.
Yeah, there are times where there is a need for the child to be weaned earlier. There are times where WHO has recommended 6 months, 4 to 6 months, depending on the child.
Okay.
Yeah? So after 6 months, all the requirements becomes extra. So they need more zinc, they need more iron, which breast milk alone is inadequate.
Right.
So they need to start weaning with, of course, when you look at the milk as a first meal, that you can't suddenly put in bread or rice and so you start slowly with fruits and vegetables. Of course, do not add any salt or sugar, so that because you develop the taste buds.
So are you saying that young children, 1.5, 2 years old, they don't need salt and sugar?
They don't need salt and sugar.
Because
that changes the taste buds.
Mm.
When they're used to something too sugary or too salty, that's where you tend to have the picky. Because children's food are bland.
Right.
So when they start having all the things that is high in salt, and you tend
sugar.
To be pickier.
Exactly.
I'm going to kind of take a quick pause and address a WhatsApp question that's coming. It's kind of talking about asking a question based on what we've been talking about. She says, "Hi, doctors. My boy is 2.5 years old, 2.5 years old. May I know if it's necessary to bring him in for a dental checkup twice a year, even though he brushes his teeth twice daily?" And how often this dental, I think dental is important anyway. But the more important question here is how often should I measure his height and weight at home? Okay. Or should I bring him to the pediatrician every month to check on his progress?
Right. Excellent. Thank you so much for that question. Mm. Okay, let's answer the first question first. Dental health is very important. Mm. Okay, I think Ms. Rosanna just now did mention about the ability to chew, ability to be able to take the food properly and eat properly. On top of that, having good sets of teeth, mm. okay, by 2.5, they probably have a few first, okay?
Right.
But it is important for you to be able to get a good connection and contact with your doctor so that they can assess the growth, mm. teeth growth, as well as the, what do you call that, dental hygiene, which is very important in growing children. There are some diseases that are actually associated with delayed dental eruption. Mm. Okay, so like for example, short stature children who has growth hormone deficiency, so this is slightly a little bit more advanced, mm-hmm. They do have some issues with their dental eruption, so they tend to have later or very, what do you call that, not a very healthy teeth to begin with.
That's interesting.
Think it's very
so the growth of teeth is also a marker for the growth of
exactly.
the child.
Yes.
Okay. Also, Ray, who sent us in the message just now, had a follow-up message as well. At what age should my child stop drinking milk totally? He's still on formula milk and he's latching at the night time. And that's something for
and
you
he's
too.
He's 2.5.
And he is 2.5. Yes.
Well, you at say after 1, you can already give fresh milk from mm. a cup. So when you have a cup feeding, it's more controlled eating. So when you also sleep mm-hmm. with a bottle, you tend to also have a lot of risk of dental caries and mm-hmm. things like that.
Okay. We have a very specific question on height. I hope you have your charts ready. I had like to know if my child, who is 9.5 months old, 9 kilos and about 69 to 70 cm, is at a normal and healthy height. And the mother goes on to add, I'm 160 cm and my husband is 189 cm. When should we be concerned?
Well, that's very tall.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe before I answer that, there was another question. You said when to start measuring your children
yes.
and when to send to see, when mm-hmm. do you need to go and see a doctor. I think it would be a good habit for you to start measuring your children at least 6 monthly to yearly.
Mm.
If you measure anything earlier or sooner than that, you wouldn't be able to get a proper growth sort of like monitoring. You would probably be worried unnecessarily.
Right.
So between 6 years to 9 months, six months to 1 year, mm. then you should be plotting your child at home and plot it into your baby book.
Right.
Okay? And then you will only notice that whether your baby or your child is actually growing adequately or is it going off the center.
Okay.
For the second question, is it 9.5 years old or nine months?
No, 9.5 months.
Oh, okay.
9 kilos and 69 to right. 70 centimeters long at this point mm. in time.
Looks like it's a well thriving baby.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah? But again, we do need to see there's a lot of things that when a doctor or a dietitian come and see your baby, mm-hmm. there's a lot of things that needs to be discussed. We need to know what's the, you know, birth history. We need to know whether is there anything wrong going on during the pregnancy or after delivery. But in general, for a 9.5 months
yeah,
old baby, 9 kilo, usually it's within a good range, and 69 centimeters sounds
I think
like
it's quite important yeah. to look at the
trend.
Yeah, the trending.
Rather
it means
than
the
one
birth,
plot, yeah.
and then when they start weaning, mm. and then when they start preschooling, mm-hmm. when they start this, or they start having allergies, or when they start changing their meals, or when they start crawling, mm-hmm. when they start walking, all these things. Because a certain age, you have more requirements. Mm.
Sure, which leads me on very neatly to when and how do you teach kids about nutrition and eating habits? If it's such a vital part
yes.
of their growing up years, at what point do you actually sit them down and say, it's no more you have to do this, but you need to do this because it's good for you?
I think it goes back to parents as role models. I think nowadays the meals are not taken with parents or as family. They're taken in the school. They're being fed with the gadgets. Mm. They don't know what they're eating. So it's important to start bentoing, which means the plates with sectionals. Mm-hmm. Okay, these are the veggies, these are this, this is how much you need, this is why you need it, this mm-hmm. is where it comes from. Sometimes going farming, going shopping with your children, or this is for energy. So there is never too, because nowadays, even in the YouTube, they have,
videos,
cartoons and
yes.
songs with food and yes. Veggie characters. Mm-hmm. So it's never too early.
Mm-hmm. To start teaching your children good nutrition.
Okay, and this sounds fantastic if you have a child who is open to listening to you.
Yep.
What if you're trying to have this conversation with a child who is very distinctly fussy or picky? How do you start this conversation?
Again, I think food should not be used as, say, a reward or this. Maybe when she does try, he or she does try, even with a 10% change, mm. I think you need to say, that's very good.
Mm.
Baby steps.
Affirmation. Positive affirmation.
Because everything is stressed. Every time it's a mealtime, it's like kicking and crying and the caning, and, you know, that kind of thing. So
you're bringing back memories of my childhood.
Well, it is a common thing, really. So when I see patients who comes in with short stature, mm-hmm. okay, so just to remind everyone again, short stature, the first 5 years of life is the most important time mm. for you to be able to track and monitor mm. and making sure that the growth is good. You know why? Because the first 5 years, children attain nearly 60% of their adult height.
Right.
You can imagine that is a lot. So they need to be able to grow. And the most important factor, if I were to be teaching my medical students right now in the classes in my medical school, I would be telling them the first 5 years, the most important factor would be number one, nutrition, number two, nutrition, number three is still nutrition.
Mm. Correct.
Okay? And then the environment and later on hormones. That's when I come into play later.
I think there's no shortcuts.
Yeah, no shortcuts at all. So,
okay. So seeing how important nutrition is, let's bring up the fact that not enough Malaysian children are getting enough access to nutrition. The latest UNICEF Malaysia's Children Without Report, 12% of children living in low-cost flats have less than three meals a day. 97% of households say that high food prices are an obstacle in preparing healthy meals. How can we expect Malaysian children to grow healthily if they don't have access to nutritious food?
Exactly. And then we are quite overwhelmed with the number that is showing one in five of our children who are actually stunted. That is
correct.
Big number of percentage here in Malaysia, being a well, sort of to say, developing, a very well-developing country. But I guess
I think it's also to do with say the kids that they studied had a lot of other siblings too,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So perhaps looking at least they can go to, I think, kemasyarakatan, the social, to have mm-hmm. help mm-hmm. from there. Mm-hmm. Some schools do provide
free food,
yes. mm-hmm. you know, and things like that.
Okay, so let's talk about that then. Let's talk about this, what I have always stood behind Dr. Mazli Malik's suggestion for a free breakfast for school kids. Mm. I think it's a fantastic leveler. Mm-hmm. Not everybody has access to nutritious food. And
Correct.
So if we can start every Malaysian child off with a nutritious breakfast, then perhaps we're taking a step in the right direction.
Exactly.
If I could get the both of you, Rosanna, perhaps you could start to maybe outline what you think this nutritious breakfast should look like.
Okay.
What are some of the options we could be looking at in terms of a menu?
Right. When we look at the diet now, I would say from years of doing being a dietitian, the children don't have lots of fruits and veggies.
Mm.
So I think it's good to, when it comes free and it comes like everybody else is eating, oh, my friend is eating, it also helps the child to eat.
Yep.
Yeah. So also eat. So perhaps we could try with fruits that last a bit longer, things like dates perhaps, dried fruits mm-hmm. perhaps, vegetables that also look like vegetables, not overcooked. So sometimes that will help. Like,
not massacred vegetables.
Yes. So they learn, okay, it's part of that. And maybe a carbohydrate is also cheap. Well, we all eat rice,
mm-hmm.
yeah, but it's portioned. It has to be portioned to the age. Yeah, it teaches them to also not miss meals. Mm. So it can be bread if it's breakfast. Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's bread and it can be with, a dates or a milk, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. Or cheese if they can afford that.
Or eggs.
Yes,
eggs
correct. It's correct. A boiled egg or something, yeah. Mm.
And can I just add on top of that? I mean, we are living in Malaysia. We've got three different major ethnicity that provides different types of variety of food.
Correct.
I think we can always make everything
yes, correct.
Well-balanced.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I mean, they can even have a rice that is fried with egg and once a week. Mm-hmm. They can even have a nice roti with some dal on another day. Mm-hmm. They can even have a...
Miso soup or something.
Yes, correct. A cereal, maybe. Yeah. You know, I mean, these are all nutritious food. But like I say, it has to be portioned correctly.
Correct. Okay, so we've laid the foundation for what the building blocks are for good growth in a child. You've said very clearly, Dr. Azrianti, that it's the first 5 years that are vital for a child's development. We know that good nutrition, access to good nutrition is going to be the thing that tips the scale for these children, right? So let's look at the other end of the scale then. When you have poor growth, how does a parent know that their child is not growing well?
Okay. So, again, I would like to emphasize the importance of recording and monitoring. Okay. So, as soon as, you know, when children go to school, I think that would probably be the easiest for parents to notice that their child is actually not growing in height, mm-hmm. as well as not growing in weight. They might be a bit too small compared to their peers, technically wearing the same clothes as they were wearing the year before or something like that. So that should be sort of like the first instinct that should, you know, bring the child, the parent to bring the child over to see a doctor.
Mm. Or also falling ill quite a lot.
Falling ill.
And very low energy. When you see a child being tired a lot. Mm. So when we intervene with enough nutrition, good energy, enough proteins and all this, my child can exercise more, can go out.
Exactly. Mm. As compared to children who has some underlying chronic disease, they are usually, under certain follow-up with doctors. So will be sort of like monitored by that doctor and will be referred to whenever necessary.
Would you mind just maybe outlining what are some of these health issues that could contribute to poor growth?
Yeah, so if a child has some chronic heart diseases that is probably, you know, causing some heart failure, mm-hmm. children with, you know, bad respiratory or lung diseases, mm-hmm. children with inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's disease, which is perhaps slightly rare in this part of the continent, mm-hmm. but we do see a lot of children like that. The other thing is actually, which is more common, is anemia. Children who are actually not eating proper meat, proper good food that is rich in
iron deficiency.
They have iron deficiency. They are actually anemic, which is apparently quite prevalent in our country. It's up to 65% in one of our papers, one of the papers that was published back in 2014, if I'm mistaken, saying that up to 70%, 65 to 70% of our children are actually anemic.
We are still going back to the issue of nutrition.
Correct. Yes, exactly.
It keeps coming back to access to good food.
Correct.
So, which means that I kind of know the answer to the next question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Who are the children who are most at risk for poor growth?
Probably, when I look at it, it's, we look at the whole factor. We look at also the cultural beliefs, who takes care of the child, where does the child go. Sometimes you put a child in a tuition center the whole day. Grandmother's beliefs, grandparents' beliefs, the child's allergy history, so you tend to avoid the whole thing up to a certain age. A child being very fussy, so a lot of factors.
So it's not just an urban-rural divide
Not necessarily. But we do see some papers are saying that the lower economics, people are at risk. But we are also seeing middle-income society who are also at risk of having nutritional deficiency.
Correct.
And short stature.
I mean, they can be from any school.
Exactly.
I have seen a lot of private schools, the national schools.
Interesting.
Also, they don't like the food served.
Yes.
So they probably end up being on an intermittent fasting the whole time in school.
Children should not be intermittent fasting.
No, yes, and they don't have enough sleep. I think also sleep plays a part in the growth because the tuition's until 9, 10 o'clock. They sleep at 11 or 12.
Definitely.
So they don't get enough.
That is a very strong medical sort of medical support to that, as growth hormone comes out only at night.
Okay. So we're going
to... deep sleep.
We're going to take another short break now, but when we come back, I want to actually go into a little bit more about what we've been talking about here, which is the whole the effects that poor growth can have on a child leading up into an adult. If any of our listeners have any questions on this topic, please, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 01878-9899. You can call us at 03773-2900. I have with me in the studio consultant pediatric endocrinologist Dr. Azrianthi Anwarzaini and Rosanna Rosli, who's head of dietetic services at the University Malaya Specialist Centre, on our health and living segment for The Bigger Picture. This is BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm speaking to consultant pediatric endocrinologist Dr. Azrianthi Anwarzaini and Rosanna Rosli, who's head of dietetic services at University Malaya Specialist Centre. We've been talking about this whole issue of stature in children, when your child is considered short, when it becomes a problem, and what role nutrition plays in the growth of a child. We've still got about short, maybe 10 minutes to go. So if you've got any questions on this topic, you can quickly tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 01878-9899, or you can call us at 03773-2900. Okay, so poor growth in children is going to be linked to shorter stature, but then let's look at the flip side, and I'm only asking this because I had tall girl problems in school. What happens when children grow abnormally fast? What could possibly cause that?
Okay, so that's a complete opposite to a short stature.
Yes.
All right. Okay, so if children grow too fast, so again, we need to make sure that you monitor your children. If they grow a bit too fast, then it is very important, or too tall, it is very important for you to actually come and see one of the doctors. Okay, so the pediatrician or general pediatrician would be able to help you with this. If not, they would definitely refer the cases to me. Tall children, if they are born to tall parents, that's fine.
Okay.
Okay. But then if they grow too tall too early, we need to assess their puberty at the same time.
Right.
Okay. Because too tall too early or too short too late also, you know, the both ends are obviously associated with some sort of medical illness. So we definitely need to do some assessment to make sure that there's nothing sinister or nothing nasty associated with that.
So is it more common to find too tall children or too short children? Do we know?
In our population?
Yes.
Probably more too short rather than too tall.
Okay, so...
We do have some pockets of children who are too tall, too early, but if, let's say, the family is okay, we tend to, you know, as long as you have had some sort of assessment and assured by your doctor, that's fine. But otherwise, do not assume and do not just ask, you know, just ask your friends, hey, my friend is too, my son is too tall, is it okay? Go and seek proper advice from medical professionals.
We have a question that's just come in via WhatsApp. I'm not sure I completely understand it, but then I'm going to ask it anyway. If a child is having G6PD, the child will not grow tall. True?
Well, if G6PD disorder is actually associated with their blood, blood medical disease.
Okay.
So the blood is not stable by itself, especially if exposed to certain triggers. Like the most common example is fava beans and also mothballs.
Okay.
Okay. So parents with children with G6PD conditions are often advised to actually avoid all these triggers. If they don't have recurrence, meaning that they don't have been triggered, they are not in the hospital for many times because of severe crisis or anemia, they should be able to grow as normal as possible.
Okay. Okay.
Unless if they've been triggered, you know, being sick too often, being admitted to hospital too often.
Or lots of diet restrictions.
Yes, or too much diet restrictions. They should be able to grow as normally as possible.
Okay. Another quick question via WhatsApp. On the point of sleep, which you mentioned, Rosanna, how much of an importance does it play as compared to nutrition? So if perhaps we could also quickly go into how much sleep is actually required per day, and how should the sleep be? For example, how long in the nighttime uninterrupted continuous sleep, and or how many short naps?
Right. I think sleep and diet is hand in hand.
Okay.
Yeah. You have to plot, you have to sleep, you have to eat. So you can't have no sleep, not enough food, only plot. Mm. Yeah. So when I look at this recent paper, I printed it out. Between the age of 1 to 2, they need about 11 to 14 hours, including naps. Yeah.
Okay.
When you become 3 to 5 year old, 10 to 13 hours, including naps. Mm-hmm. Yeah, from 6 to 12 years old, 9 to 12 hours. Mm-hmm. So you need at least minimum of 9. Normally, you see, when I ask how what time do you sleep, it's always 8 hours, 7 and a half hours, you know. So it's important because, like Dr. Azranti said, the growth hormone starts to kick in at 11 o'clock, yeah, maximum at 12.
Sleep. So it's true. You do grow when you sleep.
Yes, definitely. Yes.
Okay. All right. So what I wanted to then move on to this, we've been talking a lot about growth from a nutritional perspective, from the parents looking out for their children. Let's look at it from a child's perspective, right? What actually happens when a child feels that they are shorter or even perhaps even taller than their peers and that they don't fit in?
Right. It can be an hour kind of discussion in this in this context. But you know, in short, a psychosocial emotional outcome is very important in short children. Mm. Okay, so that's why it's very important to prevent this as early as possible. Sometimes they just they look so well. They are as active as anybody. They can play rugby. They can do anything. But when they are small and short compared to their peers, I think it's very important for you to bring them in earlier so that we can do some assessment in terms of obviously from the medical side and also from the psychosocial part as well.
Perhaps you can just go into a little bit about what happens in the cases that you see when it comes to self-esteem.
Mm. Definitely they have a lower self-esteem because they do feel that they are different if they are too short or too tall. But most of our children nowadays, they don't tend to really speak out sometimes. They tend to let their emotions, you know, through Facebook, maybe some social media.
Rebel. They sometimes rebel. They get angry.
But what do you say to a child, Dr. Azranti? How do you say to them that, listen, it's okay to be short. It's fine. In the long run, it won't matter.
I think it goes back to the family support and the environment. Yes. I think if the child is happy, small child, and we are trying our level best to get the child to grow or eat the vegetables or drink enough milk, I always say, very good, even though you don't see as much. Mm-hmm. You don't stress that to a child.
It is very difficult when they come in a bit too late. Yeah. When they come too late, see me. I mean, if there's something that can be done,
yes,
we
correct.
Would like to do it as early as possible. But if, let's say, they come in a little bit too late and they are short, I just have to emphasize in terms of, you know, being, making sure that the parents are supportive about this, making sure that they continue to do whatever they like to do in school, like Ms. Rosanna mentioning.
Yeah.
They need to be happy as a child, whether they are short or tall.
Because as you mentioned earlier, you know, if it's genetics, it's absolutely fine, right? But if a child is not growing because of nutrition, that is something that can be addressed.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Yes, right? Definitely. So,
okay. So just to kind of quickly wrap it up and sum it up, from both of your perspectives, what should parents be doing to address and to really take control of the growth of their own child? What can they do right from the get-go?
I think it's important to again, make sure future mothers are eating well, preparing their body, especially the last trimester. Make sure you breastfeed with good nutrition yourself. Mm-hmm. Start the child early, plot and monitor. Make sure you give as much variety as possible, texture, no matter who takes care of your child, yeah? Whether you have to pump your breasts or whether you have other milks. It's important to have that balance from the beginning, enough milk and then enough food, cut back the milk when necessary, gap it, have a scheduled eating pattern. If you try one time the child doesn't like, there's a lot of ways to get vegetables and fruit in their diet, you know, hidden, you know, David Copperfield style.
Right.
And please, it's never too early to be worried as parents to bring them to come and see us. Yeah. But make sure it's somebody qualified and knows a bit about children to know, you know, what to advise. If you say, oh, it's okay, but you have the worry. Mm. It's also good to have the worry.
Okay. And on that note, Dr. Azriankin, your final message to parents who may be concerned that their children are perhaps not growing well enough.
I would re-emphasize and echo what Ms. Rosanna said. Mm. Parental instinct would probably be the best sign or best, thing that would probably bring
parental concerns
to bring your child to see a doctor. Mm. Identify early, monitor early, and seek professional help.
Excellent. Okay, thank you so much to the both of you for being here. You know, you've answered lots of WhatsApp questions for us, and this has been really, really useful. That is unfortunately all the time that we have. I've been speaking to consultant pediatric endocrinologist Dr. Azrianti Anwar Zaini and Rosanna Rosli, who's head of dietetic services at the University of Malaya Specialist Centre, about monitoring your child's growth and the role nutrition plays in your child's growth as well. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous health and living segments, you can download the podcasts from our BFM app or on Spotify. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.